And joining us today on Perspectives is Hal Johnson. Hal is the author of the book, Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods, 20 Chilling Tales from the Wilderness. And this is a fascinating book. It's got some great illustrations. And I tell you, I mean, looking at this book, me as a 58-year-old adult, I sat down and I read this and I was very entertained. And these are stories that you can tell over and over again. And before I get too carried away, I want to talk a little bit about welcoming Hal Johnson. Hal is the author of this book, and we'll get to know Hal a little bit more as the interview progresses. But first of all, Hal, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Louis. This is great.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself. Have you always been interested in writing? And I know that little boys, myself included, we used to love the sci-fi, the cheesy sci-fi ones, scary stories. And, you know, the today's kids grew up with Goosebumps and some of those other stories. But tell us about yourself. What got you into all this?
I guess I've always been more or less wanted to be a writer. But when I was a kid, I kind of wanted to be a writer the same way I wanted to be a cowboy. It wasn't something I pursued seriously. But I always read, and I read a lot. I mean, that's kind of, my life is just made up of reading books and then occasionally writing them. And I read Borges when I was in college, and it was reading Borges that really got me interested in writing. Something about his stories really made me want to take them apart and then reassemble them and write that kind of thing on my own. And these are not necessarily Borgesian stories so much, but he's always been an influence on me, and that's really, I didn't write seriously until I read them.
You were telling me, and we were discussing this before the interview started, that these are sort of not a copy, but rewriting and working on something that came out in 1910.
There's a book by William Cox, who was a forest ranger in Minnesota, and he'd written a book of, it's called Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods as well. And it was a collection of kind of a best area of creatures that he'd collected from lumberjack folklore. And my editor found the book and brought it to my attention just because she knew I liked monsters and mythology and old books. And what this book is, taking those monsters and kind of weaving stories around them, kind of campfire scary stories that take his original fearsome creatures and give them a narrative.
And as far as rewriting something like this, because it originally came out in 1910, was it difficult for you to kind of, you know, although if you have gothic tales or scary tales, regardless, you know, Hansel and Gretel, some of those other stories like, oh my gosh, I just forgot, Without a Head and the Horse and on Halloween night.
Sleepy Hollow?
Yes, there you go. Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And then, you know, Edgar Allan Poe. Although Edgar Allan Poe, I think for some young people might be a little bit too much, but he still writes some incredible poems. You know, The Raven, a lot of people remember that. And so when you started working on this 1910 manuscript, this book, what kind of ideas came into your mind as far as how would you change things to relate to young readers today? What was in your mind, Hal?
Well, I think I kind of have a 1910 worldview, kind of a pre-war way of looking at things. It's just from reading old books. I really like old books. And I love Edgar Allan Poe. Edgar Allan Poe was a favorite of my childhood. I first read him in like an adaptation and then moved on to reading the real things. And he was something that I always kept in mind because he's always so kind of over the top in his crazy scariness that it's almost funny. He did a lot of humorous pieces that are not as famous as his scary pieces, but I think he's a much funnier writer than people give him credit for, and I really wanted to have something in that vein. I think that old books, there hasn't been so much of a change in what we can read that an old book is so difficult for kids to read. I mean, I would recommend going and checking out Fearsome Creatures, the William Cox version, which is available free online. It's public domain. It is more racist than this book, so that's one of the differences from 1910, so be steeled for that. But the main difficulty was not modernizing so much as just narrativizing, putting a story to what Cox had collected as more, you know, giving the ecology of the creatures.
When you mentioned that the 1910 version, is it Collins? I forget the author name.
Oh, yeah, William Cox.
Cox. When you're talking about more racist, can you kind of explain a little bit in detail? Because I know it was different times.
Different times. And I haven't read Cox's book in a while now, but there is a creature that preys upon black Florida Everglades. And his language is racially charged in a way that, you know, we wouldn't do today. But it's 1910, you know.
Tell us about the the monsters, if you want to call them, they have some interesting names. And first of all, when you're writing and you open up and you're telling the reader that you're a cryptozoologist, tell us what that is.
A cryptozoologist is someone who studies or searches for animals that mainstream zoologists don't believe exist. And this could be something like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster, or searching for dinosaurs that still live in the middle of Africa, or even just looking for the Tasmanian wolf in Australia. It has probably been extinct since the last century, but some cryptozoologists believe that its population still lives, and they go in search of it. It's perhaps not as dangerous a profession as the cryptozoologist in this book, the unnamed narrator, makes it sound, because most cryptozoologists do not get eaten alive by the creatures they're looking for.
We're visiting with Hal Johnson. Hal is the author of the book Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods, 20 Chilling Tales from the Wilderness. And they are quick to point out, beware glow-in-the-dark monsters within. So be careful when you're reading this baby. And the animals, you mix in, and I'm not sure if this is what Cox did as well, but some of the legends like Paul Bunyan at the beginning, you tell us about Paul Bunyan, and hopefully the young people know about Paul Bunyan, even the adults. But Paul Bunyan is in Michigan, and there he talks about, what's the name of this monster, Hodag?
Hodag, yes.
Okay, so tell us about Hodag.
Well, it's about Paul Bunyan quick. Michigan, the lower peninsula, is actually traditionally, that is Paul Bunyan's mitten, which he dropped in the Great Lakes, and that's why Michigan is shaped like a mitten. Paul Bunyan created it. Paul Bunyan is interesting. If I can just go on a segue.
Sure, go ahead.
Segue about him. It's one thing that I read a lot of folklorists just kind of in preparation for this book, and folklorists hate Paul Bunyan. They really don't like him because they consider him fake lore. And it's ambiguous to what extent his stories are real folklore and to what extent they were just made up as advertising in the late 19th century. But it's really something, if you want to get a folklorist kind of angry at you, bring up Paul Bunyan and they will change color. The folklorists will turn red. It's really interesting to see. But the Hodag is it's one of the more famous fearsome creatures. There are statues of it in Michigan. It's a kind of a local celebrity, but it's a huge, fierce kind of. It looks like a rhinoceros with horns, and it's just one of the most, at least in this book, it's one of the most voracious and terrifying predators in North America.
When you mentioned that some of the folklore people will get upset when you mention Paul Bunyan, is that in certain parts of the country or all over the Southwest and the area where they talked about Paul Bunyan?
Well, I think folklorists are just kind of sick of people saying, when they're like, I study American folklore, and then someone's like, you mean Paul Bunyan? And I don't know. It seems like an irrational anger. And there are folklorists who then, kind of going against the grain, they believe that Paul Bunyan's stories, although it's well known that Paul Bunyan, his first recorded appearance is in advertising literature. I forget what the product was. It was like insurance or something. Just these were stories made up. He's like Ronald McDonald of the 19th century. But there's a lot of people believe that the stories that the advertisers used were based on genuine folklore. And I think it's a commonality among most American folklorists. I mean, Paul Bunyan remains, he's just a controversial figure. If you want to get somebody on one side or the other, it's one of those hot button topics that, if you post about it on Facebook, you're going to get a bunch of hate mail. Right? Paul Bunyan is, it sounds so innocent and safe, but people really get excited about Paul Bunyan.
That's interesting. I'm going to check that out. Well, what about some of the other legends like John Henry and I forgot the other guy's name, who was very big also. It'll come to me. But John Henry, of course, everybody.
John Henry is another great folklore figure. And I guess John Henry comes legitimately from a folk tradition, folk songs about John Henry, as opposed to Paul Bunyan having perhaps his roots in advertising. Pecos Bill is another example.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of our folklore heroes in America are also real people. There's a lot of folklore about Davy Crockett, but, you know,
he's a real person,
guy.
Yeah. And then
Johnny
also, yes, Johnny Appleseed, and then because we just celebrated the 150th anniversary of the Civil War, there's John Brown, and there were so many songs about John Brown's body. You know, that may not have been legend because it was true, but
right.
then they later changed the words to the Battle Hymn of the Republic from John
right,
Brown's
right.
John Brown's body.
And John Brown is, I mean, I think it's a good example because even if there aren't a lot of, you know, tall tales about him, John Brown, he's folkloric in the sense that he means something to people, right? John Brown's kind of crazy raid and his martyrdom, it's not just an historical fact. It's also something that meant a lot to the abolitionists, to the Union. And this is kind of what we, when we have folklore about something, when we take a real person and convert him into a folk hero, it's because there's something about his deeds or his life that really speaks to what we want to talk about.
Because our station here, we live in the Southwest. El Paso, of course, is sometimes seen as a legend from the gunfighters and everything else. But you mentioned here about the American Southwest and the Roperite and also the Paiute Indians, I guess, or the Paiute excavators, whatever. I forgot what the other name was, but you're talking about, the prospectors, the Paiute prospectors. And so the Southwest, and tell us about the Roperite.
So the Roperite, it's a desert creature that runs fast like a roadrunner, but instead of a beak, it has a long lasso or noose, which it uses to grab its prey, the unsuspecting human, and drag that prey along through the sand until the abrasive sand wears the poor soul away to nothing. And the Roperite, I mean, this is something that the name and the kind of description of the Roperite are both from Cox, Paiute prospectors is just me trying to give local color to a creature from the Southwest in the Mojave Desert. I was trying to give an air of verisimilitude to it.
And as we move up a little bit to the Rockies, we hear about the Slide Rock Bolter.
Mm. There's a bunch of kind of legends of mountain fish. And the Slide Rock Bolter is a leviathan of a mountain fish, a giant whale-sized fish that sits on top of a mountain with its tail hooked on the top. And then it lets go and slides down into a valley, swallowing everything on the way, and then slides up to the far side of the valley and hooks onto the mountaintop again.
You know, Hal, I was going to ask you about, because these creatures, I mean, they could be very real, and these pictures that you have here are incredible. How did you portray to Tom Mead, your illustrator, as to what you wanted?
Well, I gave him descriptions of the monsters, and to a large extent, the creatures are described in the text. But I gave him some more specifics, and he really let his imagination go wild. And the drawings are amazing. He really knocked it out of the park. This is they're so appealing looking, but there's so much creepy and insanely terrifying detail all over these creatures. It's really a great set of pictures. But everything else about the picture is just Tom Mead's imagination. He really, all I did was tell him what these creatures were, and he went wild with how he depicted them.
And as far as the pages I mentioned, they are glow-in-the-dark monsters inside. So just the cover by itself is incredible. And once you open it, before you even get to the literature, the words, these pictures just capture your imagination. And I'm looking here at, gosh, the leprechaun, I guess, is the one that, you know, we always think of the little guy in the green suit. And at the end of the rainbow, but the leprechaun here is pretty fearsome looking.
Yeah, it's something. Obviously, leprechauns are pretty famous as, you know, Lucky Charms dispensers. But in Cox's book, he had the leprechaun spelled slightly differently and made it into a much more malicious creature, and that's the creature I picked up. It's the traditional Irish leprechaun has a different spelling and a more benign disposition. The glow-in-the-dark picture that I just want to mention, because you pointed out, they really are beautiful. Tommy did these kind of drawings behind the drawings. So when you turn off the light, behind what the picture you've been looking at, there is another drawing that is glow-in-the-dark and extra terrifying. It's really an amazing set of illustrations.
And when we think of scary stories, a lot of times, you know, death is involved. And it's not like, you know, the horrible creatures that we read about in some of these magazines or books that are so graphic. They go into every detail, but you leave a lot to the imagination. And those are the kind of books that you know, people like to read. And one of the monsters here, speaking of death, is the Funeral Mountain Terror Shot. And that is an incredible-looking monster.
Yeah, and I guess the Funeral Mountains are apparently a real set of mountains. I don't know who named them. But, yeah, the Terror Shot, it's an interesting kind of fungus-based monster that walks down from the mountains into the desert, and the heat of the sun causes it to explode, shooting its spores everywhere in order to reproduce. The only unpleasantness is if you happen to be near those spores when it explodes.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Hal Johnson. Hal is the author of the book Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods, 20 Chilling Tales from Wilderness. And as Hal mentioned earlier, this is kind of a takeoff on the Cox's book in 1910, William Cox. And I was just looking at some of the other literature that's on the internet and also in the back of your book, the fact that, you know, if people want more, there have been other attempts to work on Cox's books. In 1939, Henry Tyron. In 1982, Richard Dorson. In 1974, Vance Randolph. And yours, of course. And then, as you mentioned, Jorge Luis Borges, the greatest writer of the 20th century, co-wrote with Margarita Guerrero a book that happily bridges the two worlds, old and new. And you piqued my interest when you started talking about Borges, because I want to read that book, A Book of Imaginary Beings. Tell us about some of these other books.
That book, Borges' book, which he's not focusing just on North American monsters. He has some in there, but he also has plenty of, you know, minotaurs and dragons and things from the old world. But I love Borges very much, and I think all of his books are. I mean, he has no stinkers. All of his books are good, and most of them are great. This book is a lot of fun because he really has Boris read everything. I don't know how he did it. And he went blind relatively young, so he really had to pack his reading into his youth. By the time this book came out, he was blind and all his research is done, and he's just repeating from memory the stuff he'd read long ago. It was another amazing feat. But he really brings a sense of fun and irony to all the fearsome creatures that he writes about, and it's very much a guidebook. It's like a dictionary of mythology or some kind of just quick descriptions of what the salient features of a dragon are, where you read about them, stuff like that. But he knows so much that he's always a resource to plunder. He's a great writer, at least in part because you can read his books and run with everything he says. It's always got something, something that you can go dig into. Another book being referenced, another idea that you can follow up on.
And Hal, if there's somebody out there who you piqued their interest about Borges, what would you recommend that they go first if they have never read José Luis Borges?
His short stories.
Ficciones?
Ficcionis, yeah, that's his first real collection of short stories, and I think still his best. And there's an excellent translation available for it. I think it's Kerrigan did the translation. But there's also a book, Labyrinths, which is also easy to find, and that has a lot of short stories from Ficcionis, but also from his other books, the Aeolus, and plus some like short parables and poems. That's the first one I read. That's the one that got me hooked.
So tell us about what is Hal Johnson doing now? Are you working? Well, obviously, you're promoting your book and pushing it, which doesn't need a very big shove, because I'm seeing that just from when I got it and read it, it just, you know, I want to share with other people and kids. But because of a lot of people are just hooked up on sometimes young adult, adult. What is your target audience?
For this book, the target audience is about like fourth, fifth grade up through high school. But I mean, I try to write for grown-ups, and it's just, I mean, you write for grown-ups and you take out the dirty parts and then you have a book for kids. And that's what I did, and this book is the fruit of the labor. It's I like a lot of kids' books. Obviously, I read them when I was young, but I still like kids and YA books.
It's interesting.
I hope anybody can pick up this book and enjoy it. But if you happen to be 12 years old, it might be perfect.
Well, you know, Hal, I'm glad that you mentioned the fact that, because, you know, and I'm not to belittling any authors who do this, because some authors do use the F-bombs and everything else. But as you mentioned, if you take out all that stuff, it's still a great story. And if you need that stuff, then maybe it's not a great story. There have been some great books that have been read by young people and have survived the generations. And I think, you know, at the end of the book, I forgot to mention of yours, where you have the fearsome facts and you tell us a little bit about all these creatures.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun little bonus. I mean, I was trying to make the book look kind of like a guidebook or a handbook to North American fauna. If there are a lot of fun jokes in the fearsome facts, in addition to giving you the dry, height and weight of each creature.
Hal, as we're wrapping up here, is there a particular web page that you would like to direct your readers, our listeners, to go to find out more about your writings, your books? And, also, of course, they're going to go to the Jorge Luis Borges pages that we already discussed. But what about your pages?
You can find me at haljohnsonbooks.com. You can follow me on Twitter at haljohnsonbooks. And if you look for Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods on Facebook, I'm always posting there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Really enjoyed it. And we really enjoyed the fact that you kind of took us on a tour of this book. So that was very nice. We got an audio version of the book as well as a visual. And people can find on our Facebook page as well additional information about your book. So, Hal, thank you so much for being with us. And thank you for taking the time out of your busy day to be with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Louis.
You're welcome. Take a walk around Queens, shoot a picture and send it my way, and I'll send you one from the Wild West.
Will do.
Okay, thank you. We've been visiting with Hal Johnson. He is the author of the book, Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods, 20 Chilling Tales from the Wilderness.